Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is Andrew Main. Andrew is a magician, maker, and the author of 5 best-selling mystery and thriller novels. He's the star of A&E's magic reality show, Don't Trust Andrew Main, and he's worked for David Copperfield, Penn & Teller, and David Blaine. His next novel is called Name of the Devil, and it's due out from HarperCollins this summer. Hey, Andrew, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Mark.
Good.
Hey, great to meet you, Andrew.
It's so cool. So Andrew, I have been following your work for a long time, and then just a while ago, one of the Cool Tools show listeners said, you guys have got to have Andrew on your show. He'd be perfect for it. And I thought, yeah, that's true. So yeah, thanks. I can't remember who asked to have you on, but it was a great idea.
Well, I'm flattered. I'm a fan of both of you guys. And it's one of the things, we have a lot of friends in common, too, between, I think, Rudy Kobe and Bob Self and stuff. And so it was
cool
for this to happen.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, Bob and Rudy are both great people. So, Andrew, let's just get right into your tool picks right now. Tell me about how you use Google Forms for ideas.
You know, I think, like, you guys and probably like many of our listeners, you know, we're always in positions where we have to come up with a lot of ideas. And, you know, I use everything from notepads, note cards, all sorts of electronic stuff. But one of the things I do when I have to come up with very kind of short sort of stuff and I don't want to spend a lot of time later going through notes is if you go to Google Forms, you can create a form that's specialized. Generally, people use it when they want to send a questionnaire out to friends. But what I'll do, for instance, on my show, Don't Trust Andrew Main, I would have to come up with a lot of magic tricks that have to be like to fill a show like that. You would have to have like, you know, we had to have over 100 for the first season. I created a form that would be like title of the trick, what happens, you know, what's needed. And then you can save it as a save the link and then you can save it as a button on the home screen of your Android or your iPhone device. So if I'm anywhere I was and I have an idea, I just press the button. And you know how like when you save a web page as just a home screen app? Same thing. It pops open the form that's fitted for mobile and I can just input either text or just talk into whatever I need and then click send and then it's saved to a database that later on I can go back and go, you know, go look through. So I've used that for magic tricks as a writer. You know, I got on a kick a couple weeks ago of like or a couple months ago for 2 sentence short stories. And so, you know, whenever I was there, like, oh, here's an idea. You could just pop, press one button. There's the form, put the information, close it, and then move right along and, you know, go do something else.
So it seems as if one of the innovations here is rather than saving things to like a note file, which is a kind of a flat text file, you're actually saving to a database.
Yeah. And you can put in, you know, qualifiers and stuff to say that make it much easier. So let's say as a magician, we have different kinds of magic. We have close-up magic, you know, which is maybe a card trick. We have stage magic where it might just be something in front of a bunch of people where it's, you know, reading minds, whatever. And you can have illusions, which are big things. So I can put a qualification. Can say, you know, check off which box that is. So later on, when I sat down with my producers, I could just say, oh, you know, go into Google, the spreadsheet that's outputted from the Google form and just grab all the stuff that was relevant. I could leave the notes section open or go fill in that data. So yeah, absolutely. It was a much easier way to sort through that stuff because it was just at the time of creation, I did it. And later on, I didn't have to do a lot of filtering.
Cool.
It's a cool idea. And also just kind of setting up those limitations of you know, having different fields to enter information in, it makes it easier later on to kind of go over the ideas and have them as these kind of nuggets you can sort through and look at.
Yeah, so much of an idea is often just the context. You know, you come up with a great character name or a title, but if you're thinking, oh no, this is great for a novel or a short story or something, but you may not think at the time when you sit to write something down that that's important or relevant. Later on, it'll make it much more difficult to apply it. But you know, if you're there and you're like, oh yeah, I'm going to ask myself later on what was this for.
Yeah, So Andrew, you are definitely a guy on the go with TV show and doing magic and stuff. So you use Writing Anywhere apps. Tell me how you use them and which ones you use.
Well, as I got more involved with writing, and one of the things I realized is I try to look at, sometimes we have the habit of developing bad habits. You know, as writers, we can sometimes want to be very precious about the way we write, a certain situation, it has to be just right. I have to wear, special clothing or whatever. And I said, I don't want to be that way, because I see how writers achieve a certain level of success, they often become less productive. And I think it's because, we start to get, almost superstitious, I guess, or whatever, about the way we write, are too special. And I said, I want to go the opposite direction. I like to write in my cozy little environment, but I should learn how to write in any environment. So I started playing around with a lot of different apps for writing when I was, waiting in, a restaurant for friends to show up, when I'd be on an airplane, which used to be the worst environment in the world I could imagine to write. Now it doesn't bother me. So one of my favorite ones is, it's iOS, it's Daedalus, the Daedalus Touch. They actually have another app called Ulysses, but Daedalus is a really nice distraction-free environment for writing. And I've written a lot of stuff using that. I'll start, a novel or something like that in that app. And you'd think, like, man, writing on an iPhone sounds crazy. But, I actually just spent some time working with some autistic kids who have a lot of focusing problems, and the idea of sitting in front of a computer was problematic for them. But, when I showed the teacher my method, she showed them, you could use iPhones to write with, it excited them. And they started using these to do short stories. It was accessible. It was a tool they're familiar with. And I found that that worked out really well for me. So I use Daedalus Touch. I've played with a bunch of different Note apps, but I keep going back to just the regular, just whatever the basic, Note app that it comes with. But
How do you spell Daedalus Touch? How do you spell Daedalus?
D-A-E-D-A-L-U-S. And it's by Soulman. They're the guys who are the group of developers that made that. They just came out with a new thing, kind of Ulysses for the iPad and also a desktop version. But I'm a big Scrivener user.
Me too.
Gosh, and that I tried to it was one of those things where you get that feature overwhelming with Scrivener, and I tried to get away from it, and I went and I wrote a book I did entirely in Google Docs, which I realized was a horrible, horrible idea because it's not good for really long form stuff. And then I tried it in Word, and then I went back to Scrivener, which I absolutely love Scrivener.
Yeah, I'm actually writing it right now, a big long book, and that card, for those who don't know, it is based on a card metaphor that you keep swapping these cards around, and then you keep making the cards sort of longer, bigger, and then it kind of compiles everything into your finished book at the end, so that all along it's very flexible and mobile.
Now, the reason that I've been using Daedalus on mobile and why I like that is that it's got a really nice syncing function, so that I can have their desktop version, Ulysses, Daedalus files will open up in a folder on Ulysses. I would love for kind of a Scrivener version of that, of just some sort of super easy when I'm mobile, let me write. I think that in writing books, writing novels, there are a lot of steps to it. When I first started out, I thought you just sat in front of the keyboard and the magic happened. And then, now I realize you have to make, for me, I have to make a lot of notes and a lot of stuff, which the good part was it meant that some kinds of writing you could do in more distracting environments, some kinds of writing you could do when you didn't have your big word processor and anything in front of you, some things you could do on napkin, some things you could do just opening up a little, either a Google Form app or just your notepad.
Right.
Yeah. I really am hoping, though, that they get an iOS or Android version of Scrivener.
Well, they've been talking for a while.
Hopefully they will. So tell me about boogie board note-taking.
So one of the things is some of the things I'd have to do are going to be visual. And so, if you're thinking of, let's say, a magic effect, or sometimes when you're writing on a book and you need to do notes, and like I do a lot of note cards for things, when I go through different phases for it. And I wanted a way to do drawings, simple sketches, things like that. I didn't really like the idea of dragging my iPad everywhere I went because, that was just, when I go to a restaurant, whatever, I don't want to get, anxious that this device is going to get swiped from me. And it's, they're lightweight, but I didn't need all that. And, anytime you can create on something that doesn't have access to the internet, probably a good idea. And there was a thing that a company called the Boogie Board put out, a thing originally called it was like the Jot or whatever. And what it was basically just an electronic dry erase board, which seemed kind of dumb to me, where you could just draw on it with a pen, and then it looked like a you know, left behind sort of a, you know, the image, and then you pressed a button and it erased it. It didn't save it. Well, then they came out with a version called the Sync, which could actually save everything into a PDF. And they're like, you know, like $80 or whatever. And it's about the size of a full-size sheet of paper. It's a bit thicker than that, but it's about the size of a legal pad, actually, which is my preferred choice for writing on. So I use the Boogie Board a lot. And so if I have a project where I need to come up with a lot of ideas, you start the Sync. It's just, it's either on or off, you know, or it's, and then you just press a button to erase it. Uses almost no power. I use this thing to do drawings. I use this thing to do a lot of stuff. So it's a white on black sort of drawing, and then it saves it in the opposite for a PDF. And it's really, it's been super useful for me. I have another project, I have a kids television project I'm working on, and I needed to go in with, you know, 100 episodic ideas for that, and just sitting down with this thing and just one by one writing down the quick notes on it, doing a little hashtag in the corner so later on when I open up all my notes, I'll know. It can sync with Evernote, you know, it will work with your iPhone or your Android device or your desktop, so it'll use Bluetooth to tell it, you know, you can save everything you've written on it to there. So I've become a big fan of that.
That's cool. And so when you use it with Evernote has the optical character recognition too. So then mm-hmm. you can search for it that
which
way.
Which is still incapable of recognizing my writing. But yes, in theory, yes. Yeah, I just use little hashtags in the upper corner so I can do it. But absolutely, yes. So with Evernote, it has that syncing thing. So I'm a big fan of it. And it's lightweight. So I use the Sync. I think it's the 9.7 is what it's called. And it's lightweight, you know, you don't really worry about it, you know, as far as what happens to it. And it has a function. It's nice because you can erase something, but it saves everything you erased to an erased folder. So if you hit that button wrong, it's okay. It's still there.
Have you looked at the pen and notebook that does the same kind of a thing? There's micro dots on the page of the notebook, and you're writing with a pen that's remembering what you wrote, and then that transfers to your phone. Have you looked at that?
Yeah, and you know, I think that's wonderful if I'm a manufacturer of micro dot paper. I think that's, you know, to me, you know, and it's one of those things where, you know, it seems like a business model designed around selling you a consumable that maybe there's a better way to do it. I've got, you know, a few different electronic pens and things like that for storing stuff. And to be honest, you know, the Boogie Board, you know, Sync was the one that just worked really, you know, really well for me, because it was just like, all right, I buy this once and then I'm done until, you know, the battery stops working. Where the other ones, you know, you start pricing those notebooks and stuff, it's like, well, you know, and then I got to carry around a multi-page notebook and that stuff. And I don't know. I to me, like I said, I think they were a solution for a business model.
Okay. Tell us how you really think about it. Okay.
So Andrew, one thing that you do is you actually make 3D physical objects. You make magic trick props and you make mm-hmm. other cool things. And so
I don't know what you're talking about, Mark. I have no idea about that.
And so I saw something that was really cool that you made as a some kind of a rubber band shooter. It looks like something that Peter Parker would wear.
Yeah, I've got that. I've got my own plastic Wolverine claws. I almost shot my eye out with that. I first got a 3D printer. Bought my first one, is working on my show just to make some little mock-up props and things like that. And then I said, I'll make something fun. So I made like these Wolverine claws and just realized I used like several rubber bands to shoot them out and like almost went blind. I'm afraid to put the plans online because I don't want to hear about some middle schooler, you know, who skewered themselves. But I have rubber band shooters. I have a website where I've been putting stuff up, and I'm going to be putting stuff out there with like a Creative Commons license, because the goal was just to create fun stuff that, so when you got a 3D printer, you could, you know, like, oh, I want to make this that's a little more curated than some of the other sites that put stuff up there where you know, in more details to tell, you know, like, okay, this is the printer I used, this was the build time. So I have makeventions.com, and those are probably like my third or fourth iteration up there of my little, I think I call them stingers now. The codename Thwip from the sound the web shooter made. So I think the first image you see there is that. And they actually can shoot four. That one wrist thing will shoot, load up two per thing. And it's a rocker kind of thing. So went for a walk. I was trying to think of a very simple mechanism for a web shooter. And that came to me, of course. You know, in your brain, sometimes physics don't work the same way. The original one would have shot it back at you.
That. The other thing you made that I think is really cool is that little kind of a clip-on funnel, almost like an ear funnel for an iPhone, so that you can like direct the sound right into your ear canal.
Yeah, which I don't know if it's doctor recommended, but I was at a pie bar in Seattle, and it was really noisy, and a girl answered her phone, and I watched her do what we've all tried to do in a really noisy environment, and that's either put it on speakerphone and shove that thing up against our ear, or try to get our ear, which is generally not really flat, and push it up against the surface of the flat phone. And I was thinking, man, you know, if you had a little way to just sort of funnel that sound directly. And so, you know, when I got home to my 3D printer, I decided, you know what, let me make a little thing. And it was my first project in Tinkercad, which is a really fun program to design in. And so I made this little thing that you know, basically it's kind of like the same way, you know, creates a little earbud that just clips over the speaker on your phone.
That's cool. And between Tinkercad and other programs like SketchUp, is that your favorite, or do you have special uses for each of those programs?
You know, I love SketchUp. SketchUp is, I've spent, you know, almost my entirety of designing anything was using SketchUp. And from as a magician, is designing big props, SketchUp's great, designing stages and stuff. I would do stuff where if I was doing a complicated magic trick, I would use SketchUp to design, to lay out the entire set or street or wherever I was going to be to do stuff, so we could figure out camera angles and that stuff. And I think SketchUp is fantastic. And I tried Tinkercad initially, I don't know, a year or two ago when I first saw a write-up of it. And I'm like, I don't know, it's for me. And sometimes it's that learning curve. And I think that was it, because I went back to it when I was trying to do something. I was having a problem with SketchUp with some sort of model. And I sat down, did all the Tinkercad tutorials, and then realized, man, I can create really, really, really fast here. And I can create things that print wonderfully the first time. So I've become a what I love about Tinkercad is that, you know, the model is very simple. It's simpler. Use primitives, you know, circles, squares, and triangles and stuff to sort of build things up. The, you know, where SketchUp allows you to do a lot more freeform. But I've had a lot of fun with Tinkercad, and like below the spider shooter, there's a device there that a friend of mine said it looked like Bumblebee from the Transformers finger. That's a clip for an iPhone or any phone that lets you use it as a grip, a camera, as like a handle grip that a water bottle plugs into the bottom to stabilize it. And in Tinkercad, I was able to design that super quickly, and then I was able to make a system for making that any phone could go in there, a little ratchet thing that connected it. And so I kind of became a big believer when I realized how fast I could create things in that.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a printer that you actually like these days?
Well, you know, I have five printers right now, one of which I can never get to work, which I don't want to name the name of the company, but it's been frustrating. Another one that worked good, then stopped. And then once tech support told me to get a soldering iron, I shelved it. I have a printer that I was in love with, and then I started getting problems, and I'm waiting for, you know, but I put it through, you know, a couple hundred hours of use. So I'm hesitant to advise anything right now unless I can get this. I have three printers from the same company, and two of them have the problem. So I don't have one that I'm really like, this is it. I've used it long enough to feel comfortable.
Okay.
I hate saying that.
Yeah, well, no, it's the truth. I was just wondering if you ever go to the Shapeways or other things as a backup, or is the whole point of 3D printing that you can get it right now?
You know, for me, it's getting it right now. And, you know, I think that Shapeways is very practical for certain things, but also, like, I have, you know, you take a look at some of these things that I've been working on, you know, my web shooters. Like, I do like 8 or 9 different versions, and every time I'd want to print something out in Shapeways, it could cost like $40. You know, so it's, I think Shapeways, if you're doing things that don't have to do, really function physically, like don't have to perform a mechanical function, but more artistic. I think that they can be really good and they have a lot of applications there. I think it's still very pricey. I think online printing or 3D printing really, I think that there's a lot of things that could be done to drive the cost down and still create a very efficient business model doing that kind of on-demand stuff. And I don't think we're there yet. You know, Make XYZ is an interesting company, makexyz.com. They're, I think, a bit more cost-effective than Shapeways, and you can just drag your .stl file up there. I tried to order something from them. I make a thing for magicians, a carbon fiber deck guard that holds your deck of cards in a Sharpie. And I sent it to them, and they thought it looked like – I call it the trigger clip. You can go, if you go to thetriggerclip.com, you can see what that looks like. I sent that to Make XYZ, and they wrote back, said, listen, we don't make gun parts. they declined to manufacture it. And then I explained to them, like, hey, I'm an idiot magician that just made something that looked like a gun part and called it the trigger clip, which is sort of stupid of me. And then they were like, oh, okay. So – I ended up using a carbon fiber PLA material, which is fantastic. I got that from Proto Pasta, which it's a really neat. It feels great. It's lightweight. And when you 3D print it, it gives you all the structural benefits of making the interior like a honeycomb or hollow.
Cool. So. Very cool. So, Andrew, one of our past guests on the Quilt Tool Show, Seth Godin, is a big fan of Penguin Magic. And you have a lot of tricks on there, mainly instructional DVDs and stuff. I'm just curious about the creative process that goes into inventing magic tricks. That's like, I'm always astounded by that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm good buddies with the people at Penguin. I've done a lot of fun stuff with them. There is, you know, like anything, you can come up with something to say, like, I've never seen this before and I'd like to see this. It can be a story point or whatever. And in magic, there's, you know, a few different principles that once you understand them, they help you sort of expand upon there. But, you know, the hardest part is giving something meaning. You can come up with some trick that's technically amazing, but if you don't really care, then it's not as interesting. I got my start creating magic. I mean, I was always, as soon as I learned it, I was trying to innovate and experiment. But when I was a kid and I went to go see David Copperfield, I was like 12 years old and I saw his show. And was amazed at all the things that he did. And I could not go to sleep that night. I wanted to be so much a part of that world of magic. I just really just wanted to be involved in that somehow. And I thought, you know, if I could be a guy that creates magic tricks, maybe that could be a way to get into it. If I was a person that had these kinds of ideas. And I started learning the names of magic creators, guys like Jim Steinmeier, who is probably one of the most prolific magic creators of all time. He's worked for Disney, worked for Copperfield, worked for Doug Henning originally. Amazing, brilliant guy. You know, I read every book that he put out, followed everything that he did. Guys like Johnny Gaughan, who's an amazing illusion builder, who has created historic, you know, and the Automaton too, as you know. Don Wayne, another great magic creator. And so these guys became my heroes. You know, these were the guys that were inventing and making these things. And, you know, I love performing and I love that side of it. But I also loved the idea of, you know, being able to be at the starting point of where a trick began with an idea.
Do you have a little workshop? Do you have a prototyping bench or how does that work?
So I live in Florida. I live in California, and Florida, I have a warehouse with, you know, basically that just became storage for a bunch of things with a workshop area for there. And then here, I just live in an apartment here. And so it's totally been dominated by this. So I have a table with three 3D printers set up on top of it, along with spools for all the different materials I've been using. I have another table that slides out from that I got from IKEA. And then things just sort of drift all over, you know, my place. You guys wouldn't know anything about that. You know, you know, my desk here, I've got 3D printed models. I've got decks of cards. I've got, you know, the manuscript for the book that's out. So it just, I wish I was organized. I wished I had a really awesome, like, this is my very precise workspace, but I'm a mess.
That's really great. Well, that's all that you need sometimes. It's like a lot of people tell the stories of they're working these sort of makeshift quarters, you know, an old barracks or whatever, and they always did their best work there. Later on, yeah. They became successful and they had a big 20,000 square foot thing, and they just didn't do as much.
You know, I agree. Like, I have, like, in Florida, you know, with my magic business, so I run, you know, I ran for a long time. I had, like, my own magic mail order business and, you know, creating magic books and DVDs and stuff. And I had a warehouse and a buddy that worked out of there. And Justin Robert Young, we built him a podcast studio so we could do – I have itricks.com, which is a magic news website, and so we could do that. And then a warehouse for building stuff and storing all these things and all this space. I created this great workspace. I didn't leave my house. You know, I had this, you know, I had a spare room. I turned it my office, and that just became kind of this cocoon type environment. Yeah. You know, and you know, here out in, I live in Burbank right now, and you know, it's funny because like it's a much smaller space that I've been, you know, that I was just not going to turn into that, but I've turned that into the West Coast version of that. And you know, I'll have a girl over and she'll see the 3D printer stuff and all that. And it's kind of good because I'm like, all right, now you know what you're getting into.
That's great. So Andrew, one thing we haven't really talked about is also you are a novelist, a thriller and mystery type novels. And, you know, kind of true to your DIY roots, you started as a self-publisher, and then mm-hmm. HarperCollins picked you up because of the success of the books. You have a character, Jessica Blackwood. She's an FBI agent who is a former magician, and so the books themselves kind of have a bit of magic in them too.
Yeah, you know, being involved in things where you're waiting for other people to say yes, where it could be TV or film producers or projects like that, or where you have to have a lot of other people get involved with it. The upside is when you have those resources available, it's fantastic. The downside is you spend much, much more time waiting for that and dealing with gatekeepers. And as ebooks started to become more popular, yeah, I decided I was actually leaving South by Southwest, and you know, I was there for, you know, some friends of mine were doing a show there, and you know, sitting in the airport thinking, I have a neat thing in magic. At that point, I hadn't done my TV show, I hadn't done anything like that. I could go town to town and lecture to magicians about magic and share my ideas, and I could go overseas and do fun stuff like that at conventions. But I didn't really have anything that was for a larger, you know, larger audience outside of, you know, performing. But I wanted to have something that was sort of the same way that magic books or things like that. And I thought, like, I've always wanted to write novels. I've always wanted to write books, and I've thought a lot. And anybody who'd spend more than 20 minutes with me would hear me test some idea on them. And I said, you know what? Ebooks are great because I don't have to send it off to some publisher in New York. I don't have to wait for a gatekeeper. I can put it out there. And if people don't like it, they'll tell me really quick on Amazon. And, you know, I can learn to get better. So at the airport, I pulled out my iPad and I actually started writing my first novella, which was called The Grendel Shadow. It's about this sort of kind of the my version of Maneater's Tzavo taking place on a foreign planet and all that, and got into sort of alien ecosystems and a guy trying to hunt a creature, which is kind of a monster. And I put that out, and that did really well, you know, in a little science fiction niche. And then excited about that, I wrote a book a couple weeks later. I sat down and wrote a book called Public Enemy Zero, which was this thriller about a guy who one day, for reasons that get, you know, explained in the book, whenever people meet them, they want to try to kill him. It's sort of a reverse zombie story, because I love the idea of what if you're isolated? What if you're living sort of an apocalyptic way, even though everything else is normal? You know, what if your situation is everybody wants to kill you, acts like zombies when you're around them, but as soon as you hide from them, they go back to normal? And try to come up with a really plausible explanation for that. That did super well on Amazon as like a techno thriller, and that encouraged me to keep writing. And then I wrote a book called Angel Killer. I self-published it originally, which was about, as you mentioned, Jessica Blackwood. I took my own experience. I'm a magician from a family in law enforcement, flipped that around, and the book sold crazy. It was like I was the fifth best-selling independent author in the United Kingdom in 2012 when the book kept going, and then HarperCollins said, you know, we'd love to pick up the series. And so it was this very interesting thing. I started off as just do this myself, and then Public Enemy Zero, the first book, got me my first movie deal. It got me my literary agents, you know, and then Angel Killer led to first TV deal for a narrative property. And, you know, it was just an interesting thing where I just set out to do it myself because, you know, you can do that now. And then it got me even further into the system than I'd expected.
And right now, would you consider self-publishing again, or do you think that there are so many resources that the publishers have that you wouldn't consider that anymore?
No, I'd absolutely consider it. I think you know, I went with HarperCollins because I think that I had a lot of respect for the division and the people there, and I thought that they could really help me create a really good series there. But I know there are things that I want to do that might fit outside of what they're capable of doing or doing that, and, you know, that, that it might be better suited just to, you know, self-publish and release that way. I've not put out a lot of stuff since then because I've seen some self-published authors started releasing stuff that I don't think was as good as their first stuff, that once they realized they could sell something, they decided to sell everything, which was a thing I saw in magic with magicians creating magic tricks. You have one or two hits and then you want to create a bunch of magic tricks. Or those of you don't know, magicians will create stuff for other magicians and sell them in the forms of videos and gimmicks and stuff. And I didn't want to fall into that pattern that other ones do where they start to put out a ton of stuff and then the quality just starts to drop. But I absolutely think that self-publishing, you know, can go concurrently. And that was, you know, my agreement with HarperCollins was that when I do a book with them, I will support that absolutely, but I remain, you know, reserve the right to continue doing the self-publish.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I'm doing a book for Penguin right now, but the last book I did, The Cool Tools, was self-published simply because it was a kind of a book that they couldn't do fast enough. Mm-hmm. And also probably wouldn't do, you know, it's oversized, huge, floppy catalog size things, which doesn't fit on the shelf, but it fits perfectly on Amazon. So,
yeah, absolutely. It's a great point. You know, and that was in Magic. I put out about 50 Magic books and DVDs and, you know, effects, you know, over the years. And that's a market I know really well. I know the magician market. I know the size of that market. I know how to advertise to that market. I know how to do that. And I learned saying, okay, in that instance, you know, in that instance, you know, what to put out there. And so, you know, I would self-publish my books for there because nobody else could probably do it as well as I could to reach my own people. And like, you know, with, you know, the cool tools, like, you know, this audience, you have an idea of an estimation for that. You figured out the market for Amazon. And so I think that it's good. I think that the thing that I try to encourage other writers to do is like, don't just self-publish because it's not really publishable.
Yeah. Because it's no good.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is the hardest part for us to think about.
Right.
Well, Andrew, this has been a ton of fun talking to you. You're such a creative, prolific person in so many different areas. It's great the way that you kind of combine them and have them play off each other. You're a real inspiration.
I thank you. I'm very flattered to hear you say that. And I just don't believe in drawing a circle around yourself and saying that you only have to do this or you only do this. You know, magicians tend to sort of specialize. You have guys who are cardists. You have guys that are mentalists and all that. And I thought, man, I just want to be a guy that, you know, finds ways to tell stories through magic. And then as a writer, do the same thing. And I think that we're all creators. And sometimes the process from one thing to the other may not be obvious, but if you're saying that you want to tell stories or you want to solve problems, then you don't have to decide. You don't have to declare your major.
That's a great way to put it.
I agree.
You're flattering.
Cool.
Well, thanks. It was so really great. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.